I was really struggling with the perfume counter experience. I was intimidated.
Was it too aggressive for you? I think we all have that image of in our mind of the spritzer.
Yes, yes. And the more I started getting into niche and luxury, the more intimidating the experience got.
And you had this brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, it didn't feel like a brilliant idea at the time. We tried 5 business models. And so the winning one was a 30-day supply of fragrance. And that is what Scentbird is today.
I'm just curious, what has fragrance meant for you at various points in your life?
My mom used to wear Red Moscow, which is like the most Soviet Union type of fragrance you can imagine. I used to steal it when I was 3 years old and apply it secretly in the bathroom.
Do you think of yourself as a rebel?
I've only recently graduated from my underdog mentality.
Welcome back to Scent World, a show that explores the power of expressing yourself through scent.
Hello, I'm Jenny B. Fine, the executive editor of Beauty at WWD and Beauty Inc., and I am so excited to be here with Maria Nurislamova, the co-founder and CEO of Scentbird. Hi, Maria. It's so nice to see you. As a journalist, I love telling founder stories, and you truly have one of the most interesting stories in the business, and I'm just so excited to be here with you today.
Hi, Jenny. It is such a pleasure to be here with you. You're such a legend. And like, literally, there is no one else I'd rather be interviewed by in the whole wide world.
Oh, thank you. You are a true revolutionary in our industry. You have really changed the way that fragrance is sold, the way that consumers think about fragrance. I think that you've shown that fragrance is a true olfactive experience and not just a marketing experience at the retail level. It's something that you've shown us that we wear for ourselves as much as each other. Incredibly, you are celebrating the 10th anniversary of Scentbird this year. Today, we're going to really mark that milestone. We're going to go down memory lane and learn about how you started this incredible business. We're going to talk to you about how you've grown it, some of your own fragrance memories, and much, much more. And at the end, we have some surprise questions with people who are very close to you. And we're going to start with something very recent, which was the celebration of Scentbird's 10th anniversary. You had a big party.
First of all, thank you so much for all the kind words. They mean the world coming from you. Scentbird has grown so much over the past 10 years. Startup years are like dog years. You never really quite know how old you are as a company. You're like, because one feels like 10, but then also like a month at the same time. So I feel like I've been doing Scentbird for about 100 years, but who's counting?
Yeah.
Time flies also when you're having fun. Yeah, it's been a great moment. We had so many brand founders there in the same room, a lot of members of the press, and we even had some Scentbird customers, and a lot of them have been subscribed for years. And
that is so cool. So for the customers who've been longtime subscribers, the Scentbird universe has grown. Tell us what it consists of today.
We keep growing our portfolio. So we started with a lot more of a modest number of fragrances. And so I think for people who have been with us for a long time, they have really seen us expand into very luxurious fragrances. Mm-hmm. Now we have Scentbird Select, which is really the creme de la creme of Scentbird and the creme de la creme of fragrance, which is a very special, almost like capsule collection that we curate. And it comes in a special color atomizer, and it's almost like the luxury experience within the Scentbird universe. So we've added that to the platform. But I think that a lot of our DNA is the same. Mm-hmm. I think literally from day one, we stood for scent discovery. And for me personally, what was really important way back when I was just a fragrance shopper, really did not work in the industry. I have loved the category for as long as I can remember myself. I have struggled with the traditional perfume counter experience as a shopper the more I got into fragrance.
Mm-hmm. Was it too aggressive for you? I think we all have that image in our mind of the spritzer.
Yes, yes. And the more I started getting into niche and luxury, the more intimidating the experience got. And I was kind of like fresh out of college at the time and didn't really know what I was doing. So I would walk into, call it the Bergdorf Goodman or Saks Fifth Avenue, and I loved all the assortment, but I also felt intimidated.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back in time to 2014, and we have an image of you with your co-founder, Sergey. Tell us about the very beginning.
Oh my God, very humble beginnings. That photo is, I think it's one of the, it's the day of one of the first interviews that we did.
Mm-hmm.
Nerve-wracking, you know, talking to the members of the press, telling them about the idea. I was really surprised anybody wanted to talk to us.
What was the genesis of the idea?
Like I said, I was really struggling with the perfume counter experience. I was intimidated walking into a store, but also really human beings have a natural limited capacity for testing fragrance. It's called the olfactory fatigue, if we want to use a fancy term. But once we smell 5 to 7 fragrances in a row back to back, there's nose blindness that comes in, and it's really hard to differentiate between fragrances.
Mm-hmm.
And so I myself was making fragrance mistakes, as I like to call them, because I left something in the store. I would bring it back home, the full size bottle, and then it didn't quite smell like what I remember it did,
mm-hmm.
because my nose was not working properly after mm-hmm. smelling 30 things. And so my challenge was, I was accumulating all of these beautiful bottles on my vanity, but I didn't really reach out for them as often as I thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was hoping, as you know, I've always had an entrepreneurial bone. So I was hoping that I could just find my next favorite fragrance from home and bypass the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where technology had to step in.
Right. And you had this brilliant idea.
Yeah, well, it didn't feel like a brilliant idea at the time. I met two of my co-founders. Both of them are on the techie side at the time. And we wanted to build a scent recommender. So the scent matchmaking platform, if you will. And it was supposed to be just the technological solution at the time. So we thought of ourselves as a tech company.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had people coming to our website, letting us know what fragrances they loved and didn't love so much.
Mm-hmm.
And we recommended them things to try based on their profile.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting, and that was kind of the genesis of the idea, is these early customers, well, they were not paying us, so users, right? We didn't have a product really at the time. It was free. Passion project.
Mm-hmm.
And they were reaching out to our email saying, when is Scentbird going to sample these fragrances?
Mm-hmm.
Not if, but when. And I'm like, oh.
And so, had you thought about that?
Well, I mean, I knew that at one point it was going to have to be a business, but I certainly did not expect that it was going to happen so soon. And then, for 14 months actually afterwards, we had to get the sampling right. We tried 5 business models, all 4.5. One was like a slight tweak and iteration. And the fourth and a half one. was the winner. And that is what Scentbird is today. And so the winning one was a 30-day supply of fragrance. So almost like, the sampling, the rental, kind of like rented out see, because with fragrance, sometimes certain fragrances are an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need to wear it, get the compliments,
mm-hmm.
know
mm-hmm.
that people around you really love the scent, see how you feel in it, see how it opens up on your skin, how it interacts with your pH. And only then you know, okay, this is the one for me. This is the one I want to put on my vanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the interesting things about your story also is the fundraising aspect of it. You launched in 2014, of course, after the tech crash of 2008, when raising money was difficult. What was your experience like going through that?
Oh, gosh. It was a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
I initially started fundraising in New York City. And in New York City, a lot of investors at the time were finance people for Wall Street. And it was really hard to pitch them a beauty product.
Mm-hmm.
And a fragrance product. And a lot of my early pitches, I want to say like my first 20 pitches were a no, but they were no for very strange reasons because it would go something along the lines of like, hey, I'm working on this fragrance company. And they're like, oh, my wife doesn't use fragrance, so it's mm-hmm. not a market. And
I'm like, we hear that all the time.
Yeah. But I'm like, I know it is a market, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time I started having a proof that people really wanted what we were doing. And so I changed how I talked about Sunbird because I'm a natural storyteller. I love reading. I love books. And so I was leading with a story with the finance people. It was really the wrong move now that I think back. And so what I started doing was just showing them, like I would show up to a pitch and I would just show one graph of how we were growing. I'm like, that's all you need to know about my company. You don't really need to know that it's fragrance. Let me just show you how we're growing. And it really changed. Fundraising journey really changed because I think I started speaking the right language with the people as pitching. And then from there, it was a lot easier. But we also went through two accelerator programs. So I think that was the unique part about our journey. We went through a local New York City one called ARA. Great people. They were our first backers. They gave us our first $40,000.
That's amazing.
We made it last for 3 months.
Wow. Are you still in contact with them?
Yes, they're amazing people.
And then you had an inflection point at Y Combinator.
Yeah.
I want to take you back. Tell me what this means to you. We're going to do show and tell. I want to see if you recognize this.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Do you recognize what it is? Tom Ford, Noir du Noir.
Yes.
And I love that you've said that this smells like $1 million.
But it does.
And that became really almost a literal manifestation for you.
Well, I actually started using this before Y Combinator. I started using this when it's actually 2013, prior to the official birth of Sunbird, as we were. Well, we were not in a garage, but we were in very small New York City apartment, you know, like the smallest they can get. I'm like, okay, I know I want to make it as an entrepreneur, but I didn't really, you know, I was just in my own four walls, kind of like trying to figure out what the business model is and the idea. And I just happened to have been gifted a Noir de Noir. It was too expensive at the time for me to be able to buy it, but I really wanted it. And so I was gifted that. And I sprayed it on myself every morning, like just like a routine. And I would stay indoors to work on my computer. But it was such a ritual and it made me feel special. It made me feel like fully put together and like I can do this actually. Mm-hmm. And so for the longest time, it was very much a ritual. Yeah.
And when you went to Y Combinator, I think your goal was to raise $2 million. How much did you actually raise that day?
Oh, gosh. You're talking about demo day, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We raised 6.5, and it was the wildest fundraising experience I think anybody can imagine. Because Y Combinator is special. They call it the Harvard for tech entrepreneurs because it's notoriously actually even harder to get to than Harvard Business School because they have so many applications and they only accept so many companies. Mm-hmm. And they really need to resonate with founders. They really need to see the numbers and the growth and the story and everything really has to come together. But the reason so many companies apply is because you go through a very vigorous process of like it's a 3-month incubation process. And the reason why Y Combinator is so successful is because they measure growth weekly. Mm-hmm. Like most companies would go like month over month. No, it's week over week. If you're not growing 7% week over week in your early stages, you're like the bottom of the class. And a lot of people at YC are overachievers, type A people. So everybody's working really hard, obviously long nights, weekends, nobody's sleeping just to hit that 7% week over week. And so for the first month, you're in panic because you're like, oh my God, I'm not growing fast enough. Like, what are we going to do? And the reason you're working so hard is because at the end of it, there is what's called demo day. Demo day is a pitch, 2 minutes on stage. All of these companies, 100 companies back to back to back.
2 minutes to pitch your business idea and your results.
Yes, 2 minutes, kind of like Shark Tank, I guess. Only 300 investors and top Silicon Valley people in there, like people who funded Facebook are in the audience, and some celebrities as well. And so it's very nerve-wracking. It's probably the scariest 2 minutes of my life.
Seriously. Also the most profitable, maybe.
Oh my God, yes. For sure. And then you walk off stage and then there is this, area for networking. And then investors just come up to you. They introduce themselves and they tell you how much they want to invest. It's essentially just like that. They're like, I just want to put in, like, I don't know, 500K into your business. Like, what's the valuation? You give them the valuation on the spot. We were oversubscribed, massively oversubscribed that day. So I just had to keep raising valuation, mm-hmm. Which is like, really, like, who does that? Like, the only really time you get to do that is Y Combinator, because it's just, they have created that type of environment. Just met so many fantastic people during demo day. Again, one of those pinch me moments. Still cannot believe that was real.
Mm-hmm. I read that you're an applied mathematician, but by training, by education. Yes. And one of the things that I think is so interesting about you is really the right brain, left brain equation. Have you always had that?
I was originally very much into languages and literature. And that was kind of like what I wanted to study. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up in Russia. And in Russia, humanities are kind of like, that's not where you make a career. You're supposed to be a mathematician or computer scientist. I don't know. It's just the culture. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being in 10th grade and I was excelling at math, but I really wanted to just, I don't know, be like a writer or something, which does not pay in Russia at all. I don't,
you know. And in the US.
Okay. And so my teacher at the time told me that she thought it would be a waste of my intellect to go into humanities, like humanitarian studies and study languages. And she's like, you have to go into math. And she had a lot of sway with me. She was a very wise woman that mm-hmm. I looked up to a lot. And that's how I ended up going to college for mathematics and computer science. But of course, that part of my brain, which was the creative, the storytelling, that is what I love to do. And that is what it's almost like, you know, if I could just write stories or tell stories, like, I don't need to ever get paid for that. That is just such a thing that I love doing. Hence, Scentworld, because it's such a platform for us to tell fragrance stories. And that's how I think I ended up being right brain, left brain.
In 2018, you launched your first brand, and creating fragrance is another incredible way to tell a story. So tell us about it. We have it here. Very first one. How did this come about?
Yes.
What was it like developing your very first fragrance?
It was a very special experience for me. It took a while.
Tell me about the name first. Get
oh
a room.
Gosh. We had so many brainstorming sessions because what I knew about the brand is that I wanted it to be genderful. Like, I wanted it to be equally loved by men and women. We did a lot of research at Scentbird. We pulled a lot of data on the fragrance notes. On the fragrance notes of essentially, so we took all the close to five stars, all the perfect fragrances, so to say, mm-hmm. On Scentbird's platform for men and for women. And we wanted to find what were the most unisex fragrance notes, equally loved by both genders. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that data went into kind of like the thesis for what Confessions of a Rebel had to be based around. And a lot of the notes were woods. But there was also vanilla in there. And there were a lot of citruses in there. And so I kind of like sat down and looked at the research. And so that's how we briefed the fragrance houses. But like in terms of the name, oh gosh, it was, I don't know how many hours we spent in a conference room. It was embarrassingly too many hours.
But so many people say that's one of the most difficult aspects of fragrance creation.
Yes.
And you've created such a memorable name, which I guess speaks to your writing background and your love of literature also.
Yeah, well, actually it was a funny story because we kept brainstorming and I felt like they were not right. And so at one point I was like, I think we spend like, I don't know, like 100 hours or something brainstorming names. And I'm like, we have other things to do. Like, let's focus on the fragrance instead of the name. And so I just said, I'm just going to call it Confessions of a Rebel, Get a Room. That's it. And everybody just looked at me strange because it was the first time I've said that in the brainstorm. Like, I just like, by then I'm like, I'm just going to do what I feel is right. And they said like, okay, if you feel that that's what you want to do. And the name was a hit with our customers. And so it resonated.
Do you think of yourself as a rebel?
I used to. And I've only recently graduated from my underdog mentality.
Like, what does that mean?
Well, I've always felt like such an underdog. I always felt like I had to work harder than anybody else. I come from very humble beginnings, very humble background, like a small town in Russia, not really a place that you want to be from, even in Russia. I mean, what I mean by that is like we had, it was a small industrial town with six large plant facilities manufacturing chemicals and very poor filtration. Mm-hmm. And so the air pollution in that town was insane.
Like, so not, the odor must have been very unpleasant.
Well, yes. And that's partially why I ended up in scent and like wanting to scent things. Yes. And so I've always identified as an underdog because of that. I felt like I had to overcome a lot of adversity to, you know, to get to where I am. So the old skin is harder to shed sometimes.
So you've built this incredibly successful business. Your idea is resonating. And then you decided to rebrand in 2022. What was behind that decision?
It was a long time coming, to be honest. We created Sunbird in a very scrappy manner, despite having capital. It was always driven by our customers, but we were not one of those, call it traditional D2C startups that first invest in the branding and a very pretty logo, and only then go to market to see if anybody wants it. And so I feel like maybe a little bit I did things backwards with Sunbird because we only got pretty in 2022, which was, 8 years too late. But it was a long time coming. And I think that I love fragrance for the artistry. I love fragrance for how refined it is. And the new brand and the new packaging really allowed me to bring that into the subscription space and into our world. I truly felt like that is when true Sunbird was born. Yeah.
I think that you also leveled up another category, which is car fragrances with your first acquisition, yes. Drift.
Yes.
I'm going to tell us about this.
Yes, Drift. We acquired, it's our first acquisition. We acquired them, about a year and a half ago. They are innovating in the car space. So they are a car scent subscription service. This is one of their top selling product. It's a product. It's called Wood. So it's essentially a scented wood block, and they have the program called Scent of the Month. So most of Drift customers would subscribe to a Scent of the Month, and they would receive one of these blocks every month, and it just clips into the visor of your car. Very easy. It's magnetic.
It's much more chic than the pine cone.
Yes. Yes. And until Drift, there hasn't been too much innovation in the car. And so what Drift cares about, what we care about, is also the clean fragrances, bringing the clean formulas into the car, because it's a very small space and you really want to make sure that what you're breathing in is good for your health. And, you know, we really love the design. Wood is just one of the products. Stone is also another popular product. And I love stone. And yeah, and we're going to be innovating with other formats as well.
Did going through the process of acquiring another company bring you back to the beginnings of your entrepreneurial journey?
In some ways, yes. And in other ways, no. Because you realize that you're a stepmother. When you're acquiring a business, you're a stepmom. You're not the mom. And the stepmom is a very difficult archetype to be. Stepmoms don't really have a good rub, do they? And so I was really worried about being a terrible stepmom.
I don't see you as the evil stepmother.
Thank God. Yeah. And so I tried really hard to not be that. And it was all about integrating. And like, they had such a beautiful culture and I really wanted to preserve it. And it's really hard because Sunbird comparatively is so much bigger. And we just have that magnetic pull that anything that gets into our zone kind of like gets assimilated. And so it was like it was a balancing act. But at the same time, there's so many synergies in the business and we're able to, you know, grow the company so much even in the short span of, you know, since the acquisition. And it's frankly has been a fantastic experience. And we just see so much opportunity.
Well, before we get to the more personal side of your story, I want to ask you one final business question. You've just opened a warehouse that I think is 100,000 square feet. Tell us about, you know, the future of Scentbird and how you're growing.
Yeah, so the warehouse is very special. It feels huge, like 100,000 square feet doesn't sound big, but once you actually
in New York City, it sounds big.
Okay. Because like, it's huge. Like the ceiling height is quite extraordinary. And to be able to fill all of that with fragrance is a dream come true for me.
Yeah.
It's like what little Maria one day dreamed of, like have access to all these fragrances.
How many different fragrances are in there approximately?
Yeah, about 800 going into 1,000. And that's just Scentbird. And then Drift probably has another 100 in there. But yeah, a very, very big milestone. But I also feel like 10 years in, we're just getting started. Mm-hmm. We're just getting started. We're only in the United States and Canada. I'm really excited to expand to Europe. Europe is my home market, if you will. Mm-hmm. Europeans just have a whole other level of appreciation for Scent. Mm-hmm. So the bar is now higher for Scent Bird too. And I'm really, really excited.
Will we see that soon?
Yes, it's coming.
Newsflash. Earlier, you were telling us a little bit about growing up in Russia. And I'm just curious, what has fragrance meant for you at various points in your life?
My mom used to wear Red Moscow, which is like the most Soviet Union type of fragrance you can imagine. I used to steal it when I was 3 years old and apply it secretly in the bathroom. She wouldn't let me because it's like it smelled like a grown-up woman.
She probably discovered it.
She really did. She knew every single time, which as a kid I didn't know how. She's like, you didn't catch me in the act, so how do you know? But I smelled, I think. So yeah, that was like an early Scent memory. So she had to have a conversation with me about that. And then the fragrance was locked up on that top shelf. I couldn't reach. So,
do you remember the first fragrance that you ever bought?
It was, I was able to get, sad. I was able to get a sample first. It was a very small sample, but it was Le Parkinson. Mm-hmm. The cucumber note in that, so refreshing. Love it to this day. It brings me back to, not quite childhood, but like teens. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How accessible was fragrance when you were growing up? I have in my mind this incredible story that Lev Glazman, from the founder of Fresh and the Maker, tells about waiting in line with his mother to buy Chanel No. 5, that you know it was very difficult to find, but that women loved fragrance so much they would do anything to buy a bottle. Was that your experience also?
Yes. Only we lived in a much smaller town, so we didn't really have access to Chanel No. 5, no matter how much money you had. And my family didn't even have the money. So there you go. So my experience was like the only thing that was available, you know, was Red Moscow, and then like the cheaper renditions of that that were called very local names, not even, you know, anything marketable. And, you know, it was always like fragrance was very precious. And the first time, my first experience of something that actually smelled like what I think, you know, the Western people are more used to was when my aunt went to Europe and she brought back the bottle. Mm-hmm. And it was just beautiful. The crystal bottle was beautiful, and it smelled like roses. And so I to this day, I still love roses. It's like my favorite fragrance.
And when you moved to the West and saw the department stores that we're more used to, did that open up a fragrance wonderland for you?
Oh my God, yes. It was a cornucopia moment. It was like, wow, it exists. This is real. I want to move. I'm moving here like yesterday. Like seriously. Yeah. And that is why I was shopping all the time.
When did you realize that you could turn this love of fragrance into a viable career path?
Yeah. You know what? It was a little bit of the reverse logic for me, because at the time I had another business and it was doing well.
Was it related at all?
No, it was. Well, it was more in the tech space. So it was essentially we built software. So it was it was an outsourcing company, and we had engineers in Eastern Europe, and then we built software for American companies, websites and software. Maybe software is a very fancy word of saying it wasn't, you know, nothing too sophisticated. It was a good business to make money, but my heart wasn't in it. Mm-hmm. And so when I was trying to figure out what it is that I want to do with my life, I realized that, you know, in businesses, people fail all the time. So you can fail at a thing that you absolutely don't love. So I wanted to fail the thing that I loved. That was like, succeeding was not, I mean, I knew one day, but it was not in the immediate vicinity for the underdog. And so I'm like, what do I want to fail at? And I looked at all of the industries and all of the things I could ever possibly see myself working at. And I just wanted to be in fragrance. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be in fragrance. And at the time, I luckily had really, really amazing mentors. And to this day, I remember talking to this one person who was, I think his company was a $200 million business at the time. So I walk into his office and he advised me at the time. And so he's like, Marie, you have to really pick the table. that you're playing at. And so he's like, if you want to build a billion-dollar business one day, you have to sit at the right table, meaning pick an industry that's already so huge, like a trillion-dollar industry, that building a billion-dollar company is really easy. Which, so he's like, go into transportation or go into food, like go into these like big industries. And I loved the advice and I internalized it. And then I went back home and I realized that I don't want to be miserable just trying to make a big company, like build a big company, because it's a marathon and like your heart really needs to be in it. And that was like a very pivotal moment for me when I said, it's fragrance or nothing. And I don't really care that it's a small table compared to transportation or building an Uber or building a social network like Facebook. But I knew it was my table. Like I knew it was my passion. And I knew that because of that, if the world knocks me down, I'm going to get back up and keep going just because I love it. And it's like a passion turned a career. And so you never work a day in your life. And that's what I went for. And from there, everything just aligned.
And what has it been like for you becoming integrated into the fragrance industry, kind of coming in as an outsider and then meeting the founders, the companies, the brands?
Yeah. Well, I think I came with a very like naive and wide open, like heart wide open approach. And listen, like I said, I've had the underdog mentality all my life. So that wasn't any different. It was like walking into a room where people knew what they were doing and I really didn't. But I'm a quick learner.
Well, I feel like on the flip side of that, that in fragrance and especially luxury fragrance, that, you know, we saw many brands that were much slower to adapt to the internet age, and that, you know, are really heavily invested in a different way of doing business. How did you convince brands to come on board?
One step at a time. It's a long process. It's but I also thought I think we always led with the why. And of course, the times were changing. You know, the internet was here, and cracking the code of fragrance and digital was not an easy fit, right? The discovery, because a lot of people, like, I think it's 60 or 65% of the category is people buying something else new and different and not rebuying the same fragrance that they owned, right? So we were going through, and like the industry was at a very pivotal moment where the signature fragrance was slowly dying out, and people were building wardrobes and they were always on the lookout for the new thing. And, because we led with discovery, I feel like we were really solving a problem for the consumer. And it was an ongoing problem because even if you buy the bottle that you love, 18 months later, you want something else. Or even 12 months later, people are always in the discovery mode for fragrance. And I think the solution that we offered was very simple, very digestible. And then, of course, with the times, we also started having the reach.
Right. Of course.
And that helped.
And now you're in a very different position where brands want to come onto the platform. So now how do you and the team decide which brands you want to bring on? What do you look for in a brand?
Yeah, well, I have a wonderful team. That is actually my favorite part about Scentbird is my team. And they're true professionals in what they do. They've been in the industry. They have the industry cred, unlike me. But it is, you know, what's important for us when we're curating is really, we come from a very deep understanding of the Scentbird customer and what they want and what they love, and also what they expect from us. And they expect from us to curate the best ones on the market, but also be that doorway into all the cool things, all the interesting new things that they would not have found on their own. So they really think of us as that, in some ways, best friend that just knows fragrance really well.
And I love that analogy.
And then, of course, the team smells a lot of fragrances, and they always, it's like in this business, you always fall in love because there's so many things to fall in love with and so many new launches. And so they, you know, obviously also pick their favorites, and that's what ends up on Scentbird.
So it's really a combination of the art and the science.
And the science, yes.
Okay, I've been waiting for this moment. I want to do a speed round with you about some of your favorite fragrances. I love that you said that we all have wardrobes of fragrance today and not really a signature scent anymore. I think that's completely true. So let's start. What is your favorite fragrance in the morning? What do you love to wear to wake up to?
Oh, gosh. You see, I don't have any rules and it changes all the time. I have the favorite of the moment.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That's okay.
Okay. One of my favorites of the moment is called A Rose Struck. And it's from a brand called Liss, L-I-I-S. Mm-hmm. It's a very modern green, green rose. And it just, yeah, I don't know. It makes me feel girly. Mm-hmm. Super nice.
Do you fall in love with the fragrance immediately or over time?
It depends. Mm-hmm. Some like Delina, for instance, was an instant favorite. Mm-hmm. Noir de Noir took me some time to get used to.
Uh-huh. Do you have an instinct for what's going to be a hit? I mean, Delina is a great example of a fragrance that just burst onto the scene.
Yes. I think at this point I have enough pattern recognition. Yes. Yes.
What do you love to wear on your birthday?
Oh. Well, I can tell you what I wore on my last birthday.
Okay.
So there's a brand that we carry called Heretic, mm-hmm. and they have this fragrance called A Naked Rose. Can you tell I'm a rose girl? I know, I'm naming all the rose ones.
He's a rebel also.
Yes, I love Douglas. He's amazing. And so I wore Naked Rose, and then I also love to pair that with Dirty Rose from that same brand also. Mm-hmm. It's like the two roses, one a little bit more powdery, the other one a little bit more fresh.
Do you have a go-to fragrance for a pitch meeting?
I like sandalwood mm-hmm. for pitch meetings. It really, well, it grounds me. And it also helps, I feel like it helps my communication flow better. So, and I have a lot of sandalwood favorites. There is one, Serge Lutton's one called Santal Majuscule. Mm-hmm. That one is lovely for pitch meetings. It does project well, so, you know, I cannot apply liberally. Yeah, I also like Carmina by Creed. It's one of their new rose ones, but it also has like a very nice wood dry down, and the woods really help ground, and I feel like it really helps connect the pitches.
You're about to get onto a long flight. You're going to Europe, having meetings in preparation for the launch. What do you wear?
I would probably put Pomelo by Joe Loves. Joe Malone does citruses like nobody else. Mm-hmm. And I really love Pomelo. It's addictive. And yeah, and it's also Europe. I don't know. I associate that fragrance with Europe. I took it on my European vacation with me. It was like a great time.
Okay, last one. You're meeting the King of England.
Oh my God. yeah, probably like a Creed.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, Maria, we have a special treat for you. We have brought in some members of the Scentbird team, as well as some brand founders, and asked them each to share with us a special Scentbird memory and also a question that they have for you. So let's roll the first one.
Oh my God, Carlos, thank you so much. This was the sweetest. We have loved having you as one of the OG brands on the Scentbird platform. And just you're such a special creator. And I feel like every fragrance that you do is so cerebral also. It's not just the fragrance olfactive work of art. It's just the storytelling is just out of this world. So it is an honor to be able to share your creations with the Scentbird family. Oh gosh, my first scent memory. Oh, I have one. Yes. That's even earlier than stealing my mom's fragrance. That's the memory of fresh cut grass. My dad comes from the countryside and his father had sheep. And so we would always, well, not me, I guess, at that age, but all the adults would prepare the hay for the sheep for the winter, the long Russian winter, 9 months. But it was the middle of the summer and the fresh cut grass that they just prepared to dry out, that scent for me, it just feels like the family getting together to do something bigger than ourselves, because mm-hmm. like to take care of our animals. So I don't know, that for me was a very special scent memory.
Do you like green fragrances?
Oh my God, yes. I still love the smell of fresh cut grass to this day. If somebody's mowing their lawn, I'm like, I'm right here. I'm just going to stand here. Don't mind me. Yes, exactly. Inhale.
Are you ready for the next one?
Yes, please. Okay.
So that is Janice Trezino, the Vice President of Product Development.
Oh, Janice is going to make me tear up. And I don't know.
Not with the makeup. It looks too beautiful.
Not with the makeup. I'm not allowed. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Janice is like such a partner in crime in the best possible way. And she's been by me when I have all these crazy ideas. Because I get my ideas at like midnight or 1 a.m. and then I just slack her. I'm like, we need to make this. And so I'm like, at some point, she's going to think I'm crazy. And maybe she already does. But no, it's been just such a pleasure co-creating with her. She is such a genius. Oh, thank you, Janice.
Janice has a question for you.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Yes, I am very interested in this answer also.
That is too funny because I've been using a lot of good habit that Janice herself created. But thank you, Janice. Also, it does help to be able to color your hair. I'm not going to lie, at my age, so I'm faking it. Is the true answer. You have to fake it.
I think it's loving what you do.
Yes, that's also true. Love fragrance.
Let's see who's next. Yes.
Well, Ben, yeah, I remember interviewing Benny at our physical office. I think he may have been one of our last interviews when we actually had an office. And then that was called COVID and the office was empty for a year and a half because nobody wanted to go there. And I understand. Benny is just such a special member of our team. Super lucky to have him. What would be the company that I would want to be the CEO of? I want to be the CEO of Scentbird 20 years down the road.
I love that. So not a transportation company.
No,
for
oh
sure.
My God. No, because like I think it's going to be a different challenge at the time. And I'm like, and also, I don't know, I love thinking about the future. I'm very forward looking. And so I'm like, hey, there's no other company that I want to be the CEO of. But I would like to check out Scentbird 20 years down the road to see you know, what the early like bricks that we lay that actually ended up working. Mm-hmm. And then I get to go back in time and execute accordingly. That's my plan.
And I believe we have one last question.
Oh, Marina is, I think, probably the first person that we started working with outside of the founding team at Sunbird.
Mm-hmm. Employee number one.
Yeah. Oh my God. Takes me really back in time. What would I tell myself? So many things. I would tell myself to ditch the pink way earlier. Sunbird used to be a very pink brand, and then we became beige, which was kind of the original idea, because initially we had a golden logo, mm-hmm. but gold in digital is a really, really hard color. It doesn't translate well. It turns all kinds of ugly colors instead of gold. And so I'm like, okay, make it pink. And then I feel like I went on a loop with that. And then 8 years later, I finally got to the beige, which was the right answer all along. Mm-hmm. So I would have told myself to do that earlier, but also a funny story. So right now, the part of Sunbird, like our male subscriber base is growing faster even than our female subscriber base. And ironically, Sunbird was originally for women only. We did not have a subscription for men. We did not carry colognes. And it was a couple of years before we did. You know, I would have, if I went back to the very early days, I would have told myself to just get started on the right foot and just do both mm-hmm. at the same time instead of waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody who we've seen on the team clearly has such an affinity for the company. And I'm curious as to what you look for when you hire.
I have a very strange analogy, and I don't know if it is okay to share it on a podcast, but I will. So I have this philosophy that there's like a perfect person to work at Sunbird. And imagine like if a Superman and a teddy bear had a child, like a hybrid together, that's like a perfect person, because in startup land, you need to be a little bit Superman. You need to be able to wear all of these different hats and go after big dreams and like hit your goals and save the day like Superman. But you also need to be nice like a teddy bear, because you work crazy hours in startups and life is just too short to be around people who are not kind. Mm-hmm. And so I always, you know, yes, I look for talent, and I'm at this point able to see talent very well. I read mm-hmm. people well, but the kind heart is what I look for as well, and how they treat others.
So I want to end not on fragrance, but on your other love, your love of words. First, where did the name Scentbird come from?
Okay. It had to be a short and sweet name. And it literally took me 30 seconds, unlike the Confessions of a Rebel 200 hours. It took me 30 seconds to come up with a name. My co-founder, Sergey, was buying the domain name, and he can put a lot of pressure on me like nobody else. And he goes like, Maria, I need it right now. Chop, chop. We need to launch and we don't have a name. He goes like, what's the name of our company? What's the name of the business? And I'm like, how much time I have? He's like, you don't. Period. Just tell me what the name is. And so the first name that came to my mind was, I'm like, what's a good name for a company? Facebook was really hot at the time. So it felt like two words put together. And I'm like, I need very short words that would speak to perfume, but perfume is a very long word. So that's how scent first emerged. And then I'm like, I need one syllable word. And that's how bird came to my head. And then I'm like, oh, it makes so much sense, because we deliver things and birds fly. And there were pigeons that used to carry letters. I'm like, okay. And so the story kind of came later, but it was literally a 30-second endeavor. And it's probably just meant to be. It's just meant to be.
Okay. I've got one more question for
you.
I like this theme and I want to continue on it. You're writing the next chapter of the Scentbird book. What does it look like?
expansion. Yeah, I don't know, like light at the end of the tunnel.
I like it. Yeah, I think that you've expanded the fragrance category and the fragrance industry so very much. And I, for one, can't wait to see what you do next. And I especially can't wait to write about it.
Thank you so much. And for all your wonderful questions, Jenny, and for seeing right through me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Scent World. For more unfiltered conversations with perfumers, visionaries, and fragrance lovers, follow Scent World wherever you get your podcasts. Scent World is a Scentbird original series produced by Flowship. Today's episode was executive produced by Maria Nurislamova, produced by Mike Giordani, edited by Ramiro Gava, mixed by Alex Roses, production support by Peely Melendez. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.